If you have ever had the pleasure of having an expense account, then you know what the word per diem means. It's a Latin phrase that means by the day, and it refers to like a daily payment or an allowance. In other words, let's say that you're out on a business trip, and your boss allows you a certain amount of money every day, each day, to pay for your room and your car and your food, restaurant, whatever meals you're going to have. That's called a per diem. And when you go on a business trip, unless you work for a really, really good job, the boss doesn't give you enough for you and your family to retire and live forever. He just gives you enough for that single day. Every day, if you're going to be gone 6 days, then you get 6 days' worth of expenses, and that's all you get. And he gives you enough for your needs day by day, and that's called a per diem. Now, there's a spiritual lesson somewhere in that phrase, because that's the way that God treats us. He treats us the same way, and that's the way he expects us to live, is per diem, day by day. He promises to cover all of our daily needs, no more and no less. And that truth can either be very freeing or it can be very frustrating. And all of that depends on how much you trust the boss. This year we've been studying Jesus' words in Matthew 5 through 7, the Sermon on the Mount. And right now we're in the middle of a series about how to find financial security in a shaky economy. And we all know that the economy, especially over the last 3 or 4 years, has been slow and unpredictable and unstable. But as we've seen through our study here and observed the last couple weeks, the truth is that the economy is always shaky. The economy is always unpredictable and unstable and unreliable. It's just that sometimes we're aware of how unreliable it is, and sometimes we're lulled into this false sense of security that we can put our confidence in it. The Bible teaches that there is a way for us to find true financial security, even in the midst of our shaky economy. But you know what? It's a lot different path than one might expect and one that we're used to. And here's what we've discovered so far that Jesus says here in Matthew 6. He says, first of all, we need to choose the right bank. It's important that we make the right selection in where we're going to make our deposits. Jesus says we can either keep our treasure here on earth and watch it slowly disappear and then eventually burn up in a huge blaze at the end of the world, or we can deposit our resources in heaven where they're going to last forever. We can use our earthly resources to invest in things that are eternal, things that will not burn up at the end of the earth, loving people and helping people find and follow Jesus, because they and their people and their relationships with God are going to last forever. And developing the character of Christ in us, because that character survives our death and goes on and on. And promoting and building God's kingdom and doing things related to God's kingdom. Those are the things that last forever. Treasures on earth or treasures in heaven. We have a really clear choice. And then second, Jesus says we need to stick with long-term investments. Jesus says everybody has a choice, but you also have to make a choice between earth and heaven. And everyone needs to use money. That's a pretty necessary thing here on our planet. But if you try to find your security in money, then it's impossible for you to find your security in God. You have to choose between them. You can't put your confidence in both. If you try to do both, it's going to compromise your values, it's going to distort your spiritual perception, and it's going to corrupt your behavior. This is what we talked about last week. You cannot be loyal to both. You must choose one or the other to which one you're going to be loyal. That is your choice, and you must make it. Now, if you're with me so far, then you've probably been persuaded that we need to focus our attention on getting ready for heaven, that that needs to be the major force of our life, that that's more important than building up investments in order to provide for our future here on earth or protect our future on earth. But the natural question that comes next is this. So let's say that we invest our major resources in heaven. Then how are we going to take care of ourselves in the meantime, like before we get to heaven? You know, I'm planning on living just a few more years, not sure how long that is, and I'm going to have some bills to pay, and just how am I going to pay those bills if I'm throwing all my resources into heaven? I'd like to know that. You know, that's a great question. And so if you're asking that this morning, thank you for the transition to this week, because that's what we're going to be talking about today. This is the third biblical principle for finding security in a shaky economy. And that is that Jesus tells us to count on Social Security. Now, I want to be really careful here, because I'm not talking about trusting in the Social Security Administration of our own federal government. From everything that I hear, it's dubious if Social Security is going to be able to help me retire whenever that is, and I'm ready to do that. And I think it's probably impossible to count on the solvency of the Social Security system if you're currently around, let's say, 24, 25 years old. So I'm not talking about that. What I am talking about is trusting in God's system of Social Security, because God has promised to take care of what we need every single day, every day, day by day. He's promised to meet our daily needs. He's promised us a per diem. And because it's God that has made that promise and not our federal government, we can count on it. We can be confident and count on the Social Security of his kingdom, the Social Security system of the kingdom. You know, this is exactly what Jesus is talking about in Matthew 5, 25. He says, "Trust me, have confidence in what God has promised. If you're counting on me, then you don't need to worry about making ends meet. You don't need to worry about the essentials like food and clothing, because God's got that covered." And this is what Jesus says here in Matthew 6:25. "Therefore I tell you, don't worry about your life, about what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear." Now notice here that he mentions two things. He's talking about two different classes. He says we can trust God to protect our lives, and we can trust God to protect our bodies. In order to protect our lives, we're going to need food and drink. And in order to protect our bodies, we're going to need some clothes. And so these would be the essentials to protect our life and our bodies, would be food and drink and clothes. And Jesus says, don't worry about any of that. In fact, the way he says it in Greek actually means stop it. Stop worrying about that stuff. And then he says, isn't life more important than food? Isn't the body more important than clothes? The argument here is that God is the one that gave us life, and God is the one who created our bodies. Both those are gifts. Our lives, our bodies are gifts that came from God. And so if God loved us enough to give us our lives and give us our bodies, then won't he also give us what we need to sustain and protect our lives and our bodies? In other words, God's gifts, our lives and our bodies, they come with an extended service agreement, including maintenance. You know, the whole thing's all wrapped up together. And God says, I gave you the gift, and I'm going to continue to take care of you. And we didn't get our bodies by worrying about them. You know, we didn't, like, sit in our mom's wombs and worry that we were actually going to be born, or that when it's time for us to be born, our body would be ready. We didn't get it that way by worrying. We got it by God's grace. And the same thing, we didn't get our life by worrying. We got it because God gave it to us out of his grace. And so what Jesus is saying here is, if you didn't get your life and you didn't get your body by worrying about it, then why do you worry about sustaining your life and sustaining your body, protecting it, and having the things you need to continue its maintenance? God is going to take care of those things too. He's like a full-service provider. And so he's gotten everything that you need, and he will take care of that. There's also a scientific reason why we can trust that God is going to provide for our needs. And that is that we can observe in nature God providing for needs and see that that's just part of how he runs this place. You know, it's his world. He set it up. He chose to run it a certain way. And if we open our eyes and look at the world around us, we can see several instances of where God does this daily per diem provision of providing the things that his creatures need. So in the next verse, Jesus turns to this example from nature, and he says, God feeds the birds. That's what he does. If you look around, you see God feeding birds, and you guys are more valuable than birds. You know, that there's something you can take home and apply right away. I'm more valuable than a bird. If you questioned that when you came in, now it's settled. See, here's what he says in Matthew 6:26. Look at the birds of the air. They don't sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? See, Jesus and his followers were outside when he spoke these words to his disciples. And I'm sure that there were birds singing in the trees nearby, and there were probably birds flying around and over their heads. And Jesus probably turned and pointed to the birds flying around, and he said, where do you suppose they got lunch? You know, what do you think? You don't see any birds planting crops. You don't see birds riding on little tractors. You don't see little bird grocery stores or fast food drive-through windows for birds. They don't have little bird bank accounts or little bird 401ks. yet somehow they manage to eat every day. They always have something to eat, and everybody's seen fat birds, so you know that they eat like lots. The implication is really obvious. People are more valuable than birds. So if God somehow manages to feed the birds, if he can handle that job, then can he not handle the job of feeding us? Can he not manage to feed us just like he takes care of the birds? You know, this verse isn't saying that we should be like the birds and not work, that we shouldn't sow or reap or store away in barns. It doesn't say we shouldn't be like them in that way. In fact, there's nothing wrong with working, and even nothing wrong with thinking ahead about the future, maybe saving for that. The Bible teaches that that's prudent to do. The point is that since God provides for the birds who don't work and don't save, won't he provide for us also? And he may even provide through working and saving. So in all of our working and all of our saving, we need to remember that our security comes from the fact that God loves us, that we're valuable to him, and that he will always take care of what we need, and that he's promised that. He said he will. The birds don't worry about it. You know, just never met a bird with an ulcer. Maybe they exist, but never had a bird worrying about what he's going to eat. And so why should we? Here's another example of how pointless it is to worry in the next verse. Jesus is saying, worry cannot lengthen your life. In verse 27, he says, who of you by worrying can add a single hour to his life? If you have an older translation of the Bible, your version might show that Jesus is using a metaphor here, because literally he says that worry cannot add a cubit to your life. Now, a cubit is the length of your arm, part of your arm from the elbow down to your hand. That's a cubit. So if you're ever trying to measure out how long the arc was or anything, just get your elbow out and, you know, you can measure that out. But that's how long a cubit is. And Jesus is saying, he's using this metaphorically to talk about the length of your life. Just like we might do the same thing when we talk about somebody on their 50th birthday reaching a real milestone. You know, and a mile would be a length of measurement, but it's talking about the length of their life. And that's what Jesus is doing here, too. And so really, NIV captures the meaning really well. Worry can't add a single hour to your life, not an inch worth of life, you know, not a single minute, not an hour. No portion of your life can be expanded by worrying about it. Now, doctors would tell us, in fact, probably the opposite is true, that worry could actually shorten your life. You know, if you worry too much, then you could get something really bad and die from it. And it could, you know, keep you from living longer, but certainly it can't extend your life. You cannot extend your life by worrying about it. Now, once again, the argument here hinges on God. The idea is, who is it that controls the length of your life? Who's in charge of how long you're going to live? As Psalm 139:16 says, all the days ordained for me were written in God's book before one of them came to be. God knew exactly how many days I was going to live. He knows exactly how many days I am going to live. So I might not know it, but he does. And what that means is there's some control that he has over it. I'm not going to go until it's my time to go. You know what? When it is my time to go, there's nothing stopping me. Want to go or not, I'm out of here. We're checking out. Everybody out of the pool, you know, because it's over. God determines that, how long my life is going to be, and so I can't manufacture that or change it or manipulate it by worrying about it. It's just not in my hands. Somebody was telling me the story the other day about a woman that was thinking about getting plastic surgery. And, you know, it was a lot of money, and she didn't really want to put a lot of money into plastic surgery unless she was going to get some use out of it. So she prayed and asked God to tell her how long she was going to live so she could figure out whether it was worth it or not to get this expensive operation. And somehow God communicated to her that she was going to live 4 more years plus 28 days. 4 years and 28 days, and then she was going to die. So she kind of thought about it. She thought, well, you know, that's okay, that's worth it. So she went in, and she had all this work done, you know, all this plastic surgery, and she came out just a new person, you know. And the next day, she got hit by a bus and died. And when she went to heaven, you know, she said, God, what's the problem? I mean, you told me that I had 4 years and 28 days left, and I didn't even get one of those days. And he goes, well, I didn't recognize you. Now, you know, God's not going to make that mistake. But the point is that our lives are in God's hands, right? Every single day, every hour. And we can't change that. by anything that we do, and certainly not by whether we're worried about it. The length of our lives depends on God. And the only option that we have is to trust him, that he's going to take care of us and that he's going to take us away at the right time. So why not trust God that he can also provide for us until that right time comes and until he takes us away? In the next verse, Jesus gives us another example from nature, and this time it's flowers. And he says, God clothes the flowers. He provides attractive garment for the flowers to wear. And you know what? You last longer than they do. Remember when he was talking about the birds, he says, you're more valuable than they are. And here he says, look at the flowers, but you know what? You last longer than flowers do. Matthew 6:28 says, why are you worried about clothes? See how the lilies of the field grow? They don't labor or spin. You know, there's no flowers out there with a little clothing manufacturing plant going on. And again, Jesus probably pointed around him to the beautiful wildflowers that were growing around where they were sitting, and he said, where do you suppose these flowers get their beautiful costumes? Where do you suppose that comes from? It isn't by working hard. That's his point here. And then he says, I tell you, though, that not even Solomon in all of his splendor was dressed like one of these. And Solomon was one of the wealthiest men that ever lived, and certainly he was on the list of best-dressed ancient Israelites. But wildflowers are even more beautiful, even though basically they're just grass, right? That's all they are. And that's what he says in verse 30. If that's how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and then tomorrow it's thrown into the fire, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? We planted some flowers this year. We made a big flower bed out in front of our house. And you know what I've been learning? They're pansies. Now, I don't mean that they're pansies as in that's the type of flower we planted. What I mean is that they're wimpy. Flowers are wimpy. They don't stand up. They're not strong. They're very beautiful and colorful, but they're fragile. Trees are sturdy. You can climb them and swing in them and build houses in them, and they seem to last forever, and they grow incredibly slow, but they can bear an amazing amount of weight. And even bushes, I'm finding out, are at least strong enough to make it through the winter and keep all their leaves and, you know, kind of look good the next year, and you don't have to replant them. But flowers are pansies. They're wimpy. They're temporary. They don't last at all. It's basically just grass that blossoms and then it dies. And all the flowers that we planted, that, you know, we even had one neighbor that came by and was so impressed with our yard that he took a picture of it. That's like the only time that's ever going to happen. So he took this picture. He's so impressed. But you know what? All those flowers in a couple weeks are going to be gone. Some of them are already on their way out. Jerry tells me I got spider mites. So this afternoon I'm going to rip them out. But they're just temporary. They're wimpy. They don't last. You, on the other hand, are going to last forever. You're going to last forever. And so if God clothes something so temporary with such beautiful clothing, won't he make sure that at least you have what you need to wear? Won't he at least take care of the essentials that you need to clothe your body? And so you know what? You don't need to worry about it. Right down here at the bottom of this verse is this little phrase that I think is probably the major point of this passage. Jesus says, O you of little faith. And you know, it's a gentle admonition. It's kind of a gentle rebuke. It's almost like, you know, maybe modern day language, he might say, hey, micro faith, what were you thinking? You know, that you don't have enough faith to trust God. And Jesus is trying to say, I think in a lighthearted way, I don't think he's being mean here. He's trying to say, is that all the confidence that you have in me? Is that the extent of how much you trust me? Don't you trust me more than that? That's really the point of these verses. If you're worried, then what that shows is that you are having a problem with faith. You're having a faith crisis if you're worried about what's going to happen to you and whether there's going to be enough to take care of you. You're having difficulty trusting actually in God's abilities. It isn't a self-confidence problem that you're having. It's a God-confidence problem that you're having. There were three other occasions when Jesus used this same expression, talking to his followers, and when he said micro faith, hey, micro faith, to the same people that were following him. The first time the disciples were out on a lake in a small boat, and they were caught in this violent storm, and waves are crashing over the side of the boat, and Jesus is asleep through this whole thing. And they wake him up because they're afraid that they're going to die. They're sure that this is the end. And Jesus says to them, "You of little faith, why were you so afraid?" You know, I'm sure Jesus wasn't puzzled about what was going on, but he expresses it almost that way, like, there's something not right here. I'm not quite catching it. Why are you afraid? That seems like an odd response. Why are you afraid? And then he orders the waves to be still. And suddenly they're on this calm water in the middle of probably a beautiful sunny day on the Sea of Galilee. There's another time the disciples are also in a boat, but this time they're alone. And they see Jesus walking toward them across the surface of the water. And this gets them pretty excited. They've never seen that before. Here comes Jesus walking on the water. And so Peter wants to try that out too. This is before they had water skiing, and he wanted to try that out. So he asks if he can step out of the boat, and Jesus says, sure. And so he gets out and starts walking across the water toward Jesus. But it says that the wind frightened him. You know, he was fine walking on water, but the wind was blowing. You know, I don't understand that, you know, because it seems like if you're going to walk on water, that should say something to you. But the wind scared him, and so he started sinking as soon as he was afraid. And Jesus takes him by the hand and pulls him up, and he says, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" You know, I think the reading there is that Jesus is surprised that they would have so little confidence in God. The third time, they're also in a boat. I don't know what it is about boats and faith, but they're also in a boat. And Jesus makes some comment using yeast as a spiritual metaphor. But the disciples think that he's criticizing them for not packing any bread for the trip. And even though on two separate occasions before this, they had seen Jesus feed thousands of people with a few loaves of bread, they probably start, you know, criticizing each other for not packing the groceries. And Jesus says, "You of little faith, don't you understand? Don't you remember?" I think he's surprised that their confidence in what God can do is so small. See, worry is the opposite of faith. That is, trust or confidence in God's abilities, in what God can do. And in each of these cases, the disciples forgot what God was capable of doing. It just slipped their mind. They didn't factor that into their equation. And so they were worried, or they were afraid, or they doubted, or they were arguing because they missed the point, because they weren't thinking about God, who he is, and what he's capable of doing. They forgot that God is the almighty commander and creator of the universe. And so as a result, they didn't quite get it. And Jesus says, "Microfaith, what's working here? Why isn't this coming together? Why did you doubt? Why are you so afraid? Don't you understand? Don't you remember? Whenever you worry, it means that you don't think God is up to handling your problems, that he somehow is not up to meeting your needs. And so it's a lack of confidence, not in yourself, but a lack of confidence in what God can do." So here's what Jesus says at the end of this, is basically just, don't worry about it. If you trust God, then you don't have to worry. Do not worry saying, "What shall we eat?" or "What shall we drink?" or "What shall we wear?" For the pagans run after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. The word translated pagans here is actually Gentiles, and it refers to people who do not know God, people who do not have a relationship with God. And what this is saying is worry is appropriate for those who do not understand anything about God. If you don't know God, then worry makes a lot of sense. But if you do know God, and if you know anything about him at all, then you know that he already knows what you need and that he can and will take care of you and provide for it. So don't worry about it. Trust God. Count on him. Count on the social security system of his kingdom. Philippians puts it this way. This is Paul's confidence. He says, "God will meet all your needs according to his glorious riches in Christ Jesus. Whatever you need, God is going to provide." You know what? If this verse is true, then it means two different things. And we've all thought about the first one, but I don't know if we think about the second one. The first one that we all think about is, then I'm going to have whatever I need, right? If I need it, then I'm going to have it. And so God's going to give it to me if I need it. We've all thought of that one. But there's another meaning here, which is, if I don't have something, and that verse is true, then it probably means that it's something I don't need, because God has promised to provide what I need. And so if there's something I don't have, I think it's a real question. Is it really something that I need? A lot of times we're worried not because we want more than what God has provided. Not because we want in the things that we have to have, but rather we want more than what God has provided. He takes care of us today, but we worry about tomorrow. He takes care of our needs, but we worry about our desires. But the Bible calls us to live a life that's confident that God will provide, and calls us to live a life that is satisfied with what God provides. Hebrews 13 says, keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have, because God said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. So if that's true, then I need to learn to be content and be free from the love of piling up money so that I'll have my security in that. 1 Timothy says, if we have food and clothing, we'll be content with that. Those are the words of Paul, who learned this art of contentment. And Paul even learned that he could be satisfied with whatever God provided, even when it wasn't very much. Here's what the same man says in Philippians 4. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. He'd lived fat on the hog, you know, and he'd lived on a shoestring. So he knew what both of them felt like. He said, I know that, but you know what? I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. Y'all know what the word secret means, what it is? It's something we don't know, right? And he says, and so we can relate to that. We can say, yeah, I don't know how to be content in every situation. That is a secret. How did you do it? And he says, I've learned that secret. And you know what it is? It's to have confidence that God is going to provide. The secret that he's talking about here to contentment is to trust or have confidence in God. If we really believe that God will supply us with everything we need, then instead of worrying about it, we can relax and we can take life just as it comes. I brought you a movie clip today. Didn't want to let you down. So I want to show you a picture, and it's a clip from the movie called Joe Versus the Volcano. A very realistic portrayal, almost a documentary. No, I'm completely joking here. Okay, this is like fantastic and, you know, satirical. But this is a fun movie, and this clip is Joe, and this is Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. They're getting ready to jump into a volcano. So let me tell you how they got there. Joe, the man played by Tom Hanks, has been diagnosed with a fatal disease and told by his doctor that he has just a short time to live. And so then this man comes to him with a proposition and says that he will give him an enormous amount of money if he's willing to jump into a volcano. And the reason that he needs to jump into the volcano is because the villagers who live there need to have a human sacrifice willingly walk into the volcano. And if they do, then they will sign a business deal with this businessman. And so the businessman needs to get a sacrificial lamb, and so he hires Joe, who's at the end of his life, to jump into the volcano and end his life prematurely. And I want you to see the contrast in this clip between those who worry and those who have confidence that everything is going to be okay. See, wasn't that great? Oh, okay, sorry.
Okay. I love you too.
Okay.
Sorry, guys. Not going to happen. But that's okay. Well, you know, rent the movie. Okay. But anyway, here's the deal. We have a choice of how we're going to go through life. We can either trust that God's going to take care of everything, or we can worry that it's not going to happen, that we're not going to have enough, and that somehow we need to prepare ourselves for every eventuality of what could happen. Trust is an assurance, and it is not what many people think. It's not an assurance that everything is going to be great. You know, sometimes people have that feeling that when you put a confidence and trust in God and you say, I know this is all going to work out okay, that people think that that's somehow naive or maybe even stupid to have that kind of simplistic attitude toward God, that everything is going to be great. But you know what? Faith is not an assurance that everything is going to be great. Faith and assurance is no matter what happens and no matter how ungreat things get, that everything is going to work out all right. That God has the end in mind, and he's going to come to the end that he wants to come to. He's going to bring us to that with love and with graciousness and with mercy, but he's going to take us through a lot, maybe, to get there. And so faith isn't the assurance that everything is going to be great. It's the assurance that everything is going to work out all right. God uses all kinds of disappointments in our life, all kinds of hardships, and despite all that, however shaky, however difficult, however frightening the experience looks, as we're sitting in the boat and the waves are coming crashing over the side, God knows where he's taken us, and he knows what the end looks like. And he is going to bring us through, and everything is going to work out all right. We have a choice. We can either choose to worry about life or to trust and put our confidence in God. And there are a lot of different things that people put their confidence in. If you do get a chance to see the end of that movie, you can put your confidence in luggage that floats, you know, and he gets to ride out on the suitcase. You can put your confidence in blind chance that somehow there's enough karma or kismet or whatever it is in the world that things are going to work out. People put their trust in all kinds of things. And the Bible says that all of them come short except for one thing. Those who put their confidence in God for their future can know and be certain that things are going to work out all right, that he does hold the future in his hands, and he's able to provide everything that we need in the meantime. I want to close with this verse from 1 Timothy 6. It says, we've looked at this verse a couple times as we've gone through this series, but we're coming back to this because this passage in 1 Timothy 6 really parallels the passage that we're reading here in Matthew chapter 6. And this is what Paul says, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain. Now, we've seen that part before. Remember when we talked about the shakiness, entropy, and the shakiness of our economy and everything? Don't put your hope in wealth, which is so uncertain. Now you're ready for the second half of the verse. But to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. See, that's our choice. We've seen that we have a choice between heaven and earth. We've seen that we must make that choice, that we have to decide which one we're going to be loyal to. And here, what we find out is that this choice is something that affects whether we worry or whether we trust. If we have our treasure in heaven, if we put our confidence in God, then we don't need to worry about what we need because we're sure that God will take care of us. As we think about these verses and we meditate on it, the question that I think we need to ask ourselves is, what are we worried about? What are the things that cause you to feel anxious and feel uncertain and feel shaky? And maybe it is the economy. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe your job security doesn't feel all that secure. Maybe it's something else, your family. Maybe it's relationships that are plaguing you. Maybe it's some other kind of concern, your kids. Whatever it is that we're worried about, we have that choice that we can put our confidence and our trust in God's ability to take care of that, to handle that, because it really is a question of whether or not we believe that God's up to it or not. Do we believe that God's capable of doing what he says he can do? Because if we do, then we can relax, we can let it go, and we can take life as it comes. Let's pray together.